in North Central Indiana. It's the Insurgent Radio Network with Tom Hester, Terrible Tommy, broadcasting live from the bunker in Warsaw, Indiana, right next to the Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern, where the elite meet to drink, sometimes eat. You can reach Tom at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. You can direct your letters and mail to Tom Hester, the Insurgent, or just old plain box holder. Good old Tommy will get it.
A long, long time ago, we used to get our food homegrown, and toothpaste used to make you smile. It used to be you'd shop with ease, never eating antifreeze. You planned to keep on living quite a while. But now our goods are all delivered from somewhere on the Yangtze River. No one knows the source there, so you might find some horsehair. But if corporations make a buck, they don't give a flying. Peking duck. And with this system we get stuck today, it makes you sigh. Now when you abide by an American pie, your grandma didn't bake it, it was made in Shanghai, where they engineered the apples to be juicy, not dry. But the crust is made of cardboard and lime. Don't feed it to your dog, he might die. Now didn't you eat a tasty cake, and did it make your stomach ache? I could have said I told you so. The reason you are looking wrong is some guy took bribes in Szechuan, so you just bit into Little Debbie's clothes. And now the toys you bought from Fisher Price have toxins deemed unsafe for mice, and Elmo tends to wheeze. I'll be placed with busy me, but of all my problems seem so far when I see my cheap new DVR. I'll even brush my teeth with tar, and you will see that I'll buy from some young guy. I'd rather shit and it's heavy, but the price is too high. $20 will buy a car from Shanghai, and honey, that'll be the day we all die.
Well, boys and girls, you poor people, I'm back again, ready to offend another group of people, and some of the old ones too. Hey, it's a beautiful day here. This is the first real sign of real spring back here in Indiana, North Central Indiana. It's about 50 degrees already today, and I got my old lawnmower out there and had to prime it a little bit, got it going, trying to mulch the leaves into my yard. Yeah, so anyhow, it's a beautiful day. I just hope it maintains this for a while. White Aryan Resistance Network calling, White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Terrible Tommy here in the bunker, right here in North Central Indiana at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana 46581. It's almost time to get your donation for the radio show in. We've gotten several in already. Yeah, and some pay 6 months or a year ahead of time. How about that? That works, okay. Well, I'm just putting up a new audio file on the website called Mongol Genghis Khan Warfare, Be Under Warfare. It's about almost an hour lecture. Terrific. And I'll tell you what, you know, it reminds me of the conquests of Genghis Khan. It reminds me of the ISIS. Because if this was back in the day, and they weren't faced with super modern warfare and airplanes, ISIS would have had that cleaned up over there already, depending on how you look at it. They would have cleaned house. They'd have been in power. But, of course, they're faced with the combined might of predatory capitalism and all that kind of stuff. So, I don't know which is worse. Crazy, fanatic, religious people killing everybody, or crazy, fanatic, Christian people killing everybody. You take your pick. And these lectures I put up there on my website are not up there just for fun and games. This is called Aryan Education 101. We put a lot of good stuff up there, and it's up there for a reason. Now, you can listen to it, and you can disagree with some of it, or maybe you disagree with all of it. But anyhow, it's up there, and you should be listening instead of running around the websites looking for how many niggers jumped on how many white people and all that kind of stuff. And the Jews, what are the Jews doing today? We have our share of that stuff, but to dwell on it all the time without educating yourself, because you're going to have to decide what kind of warfare you're going to be involved in. If you're going to be involved in warfare, you're going to be involved in might is right type, or you're going to be involved in peasant uprisings. I'll tell you, I'm torn between the two types of response to what's going on. One is we'd like to gain power and stop it all. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen for a long time. It's going to take the combined forces of a lot of people who don't get along together too well, if you know what I mean. If you think you can stick to one particular thing and win any battles in this coming war, you're mistaken. It's going to be a hell of a lot of different people, different reasons, and so forth, that have decided that this system has got to go. And they agree on that. And I think that's the first agreement we should have. A lot of the other arguments can be taken care of later. The military, congressional complex has got to go. Like I said, that's what Eisenhower said first, and they made him change his speech to military industrial complex. But originally it was congressional complex, and that's what it is. 400 or 500 of the rottenest, corrupt, most cowardly bastards on the face of the earth. It's no wonder our country is hated around the world. People in other countries don't hate just Americans. They hate the leaders of America. The so-called leaders, that's who they hate. But a lot of them hate us for not doing anything about it. And a lot of us and all these other people won't seem to do anything about it because it's going to take a lot of... You know what I mean. It's going to take a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. But hopefully this thing will deteriorate faster and faster and faster, where it'll be much easier to maintain ourselves. You know, this argument before the Supreme Court on whether the state should allow symbols such as the Confederate flag on the license plates should be outlawed because it offends some people. The people that offend me the most are these Southern veterans outfits. They just say, oh, it has nothing to do with race. It's just, you know, our ethnic heritage. We don't criticize black people. I'm not upset with the black race. It's just our heritage. They're so full of shit, it's running out their ears, and the progressives are right about it. Even in denial, they're racist. They'll deny it up and down the street and call us all kinds of dirty names because we tell the truth and we believe what we say. But if you got to put a symbol on your bumper of your car to prove you're a white man, I think you're pretty pathetic. I don't need a symbol on the bumper of my car. I just need an attitude. and know what to do and know what to support and know what to say. And when they say you're a racist, say, God damn right I'm a racist. Why aren't you? Even to a black person. I say that to a black person. They say, you're a racist? I say, hell yes. Why aren't you? You know, you jump from one slavery into another. The Christian church enslaved you. Once in a while, you know, on this satellite, you pick up a lot of these preachers. And, of course, there's a lot of white ones on there, crazy ass. But there's a lot of black ones on there going on and on. And I sit there and I say, how could you possibly involve yourself in Christianity as somebody who was on a slave, family who was a slave at one time? How could you be a Christian? The slave master's religion. Of course, these guys that got these big churches and are on television, whether they're black or white, are obviously con men making a fortune. Like that one down in Georgia that wants his people all in his church to put in $300. I guess he's got thousands of people and buy him a brand new jet plane. Yeah. I mean, they get off the plantation, and of course they're Christians before they get off the plantation, worshiping the slave master's religion. And there's nothing for white people to talk about and brag about, because they're into the slave religion long before the blacks were. The blacks were animists in Africa, but the whites got into Christianity way back there in Europe when they were good heretics. Yeah, they were good pagans. They had a good religion. It was sort of a nature's religion, a little bit like Odinism. And it's interesting that it was a lot like the Mongol Indians had in this country, you know, giving reverence to the trees and the rivers and all that kind of stuff. You know, another point, too, I was listening on this Genghis Khan situation, what a badass he was. Yeah. See, all those Western Indians are derived from the Genghis Khan Mongols. They're Mongols. Forget that Indian shit, unless they got a dot on their head. Well, I was just thinking, if the Europeans, if our ancestors hadn't come with rifles and gunpowder and advantages of mechanized advantages, this North America would still be run by the Mongols. Because as far as horseback and spears and all that kind of and tactics, they were excellent. And they just came up against a technologically advanced group of people. And they just couldn't match it, or wouldn't match it. Boy, they're blowing up a lot of shit over there in Yemen. There's not a hell of a lot in Yemen but sand and dirt and like that. Poverty-stricken people, they don't have much. And at North Yemen, South Yemen, they were fighting over that for years. And now it's a totally new thing. And dropping bombs and mostly blowing up sand and the buildings and everything else. And it always kills me. It's always the military always say we got to blow the village up to save the village, you know. And they're shooting the hell out of the village from these big guns way outside of town, just blowing the shit out of everything to where there's nothing even to live in. But they're trying to occupy and save the people. Yeah. Jesus, what an insanity. It's so insane. Starting off Monday morning here with, I don't know what to say, boys and girls, it's insane. Back to what I was talking about, the Confederate flag is an embarrassment for me, because it's true that a hell of a lot of very questionable white people put that on their car. In fact, almost whenever I see it, it's some pretty much low-life meth-dealing person, drug dealing type, that are putting that on the back of their car. People that I wouldn't have in any operation and that I might be running. No way. And so that's a problem, too. I like the non-equal sign myself. I think it says it all. But this idea of putting a Confederate flag on your car, that that's supporting the white race, or at least the part of the white race that I want to support, is ridiculous. Because I've seen these cars with the whole top of their roof with the Confederate flag and stuff like that. But these are the same white guys that are going out on the weekend of these professional football, basketball, baseball, and cheering on the niggers. The same niggers that are screwing the white cheerleaders and having little mulatto kids and making millions of dollars doing it. And so most of these white guys, they're not really that considerate about the white race. They don't give a shit about the white race. All they care about is their beer and their drugs and their football and basketball. No, most of the white race in this North America is expendable as far as I'm concerned. I would not raise a finger to save almost all of them. I will choose very carefully who I might choose to risk my life saving of the white race. I was sent another something the other day from an appeal for money to put out a reward for some gal that was murdered down in Alabama or Mississippi. I don't know what the details were, but I guess they burned her house, burned her apartment, burned her alive. But they were wanting $100 a head to as a reward. Well, I replied that very likely the person that murdered her was black. And very likely that person's within 25-mile radius of where she's at. And also that she knew the perpetrator and was probably dating the damn guy. Now, I don't know all the details. But I sent back a note and said, I only support our people. Our people that we know and we know are okay and who have done good things for their fellow white people. Not giving any money to somebody that would have called us names and would have found us guilty if she was on a jury. You know, most of these white people and white women that get killed, they're having relations with Negroes anyhow, or Mexicans, or a low-life white. So they're worthless, and you come to their aid and try to help them out. If they'd have been on a jury, they'd have found you guilty or me guilty. Any good white racist that says, hell yes, I'm a racist, most of these white assholes would condemn you in a second. So don't fall into the trap of people saying, well, we got to send money to help this, find this guy that killed this woman. Well, it doesn't take thousands of dollars to get that done. You just have your little crew and you look around within 25-mile radius or maybe 25-block radius, figure out where she hung out, figure out who she was dating and all that kind of stuff. And if you find she's worthless, well, you don't do anything. It's up to the family to take care of this kind of stuff. In the old days, you know, even other white groups like the Greeks are issued a knife when they hit puberty. They carry it on their belt. I know the Sikhs and all those people do. And that knife's meant for one thing, to defend the honor of the family. And if somebody kills and rapes your daughter or something like that, it's up to you to solve the problem. Not the cops, not the Justice Department, not anybody. It's up to you. But you know what they do? Most of them get on TV and say, oh, that nigger was deprived. His ancestors were slaves. So I'm just going to pray to the Lord Jesus Christ for his soul. And I forgive him. Yeah, that's what they do. You see it all the time. If their family gets wiped out, I wouldn't lift a finger. Nothing I could do anyhow. Yeah, that's the way I feel about it. And that's just the most honest thing to say. Most people may feel this way, but they won't say it. I see it all the time in the news. And I say to my gal, well, that's showbiz. That's showbiz. They wouldn't take care of their own. They wouldn't involve themselves in resisting the race mixing. They wouldn't do anything else. And they condemn racists. And now they're dead. Well, that's the way it goes. Actually, the swastika would be much more powerful on a bumper, but it conveys the wrong message. Hitler screwed up. Millions of white people died because of the crazy-ass attacks on other countries and so forth. And unless you're a Hitler worshiper, you're not going to put a swastika on your bumper, even though the swastika in its original form and from historically is an admirable symbol. But it's been dragged through the mud so much it couldn't be used. However, if these guys got the balls, they can put a swastika on their bumper, then they can get their war started real quick. Yeah. So get our non-equal sign. Put that on your bumper. Or like I've got a sign in the back of my car that says I profile. Now, is there any question about that? Do you have any trouble understanding that? Do you think people can't understand that? I profile. And I got it on my big fluorescent lighted sign, 4x8 sign out front of the house. It says the same thing. You know what? I get a lot of people going by honking their horns in agreement. That's right. I don't give a shit what the government doesn't do. You know they lie anyhow. They're going to figure a way around. They're going to profile. They got a profile. They're not going to quit profiling. They just got to be sneaky about it. That's all. You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see a regiment of Genghis Khan's men and his horses and his wagons magically set down in the middle of Chicago. Or Attila the Hun. Or even ISIS. And stir the pot. See what the hell's going to happen here. That would be... I hate to say it, it would be funnier than hell in a black sort of way. Yeah. Can you imagine those Mongol warriors? They used to travel fast with those horses. And when they went over the steppes and down into the other areas to terrorize the Muslims, every horseman had 5 horses tied together behind him, so they never run out of horses. Yeah. That would be something to behold, watching those boys go through a city like Chicago, or Cleveland, or Indianapolis, and watch these soft people that these fat asses and the whole bit run for their lives. Run for their goddamn lives. You might say, Metzger, terrible Tommy, you're a sick man. You need help. No, this is a sick population, and they need weeded out. They're voting over in Nigeria. What a clusterfuck that is. I guess they got about 40 states in Nigeria. I didn't know that. I thought they just had tribal areas. 40 states. The United States goes all over the world trying to impress our form of insanity on everybody else. So they're bringing all these people out of the backwoods over there, and they're voting today. And you know what's going to happen? the same thing that always happens. The vote will be contested. The warlords will start attacking each other, and pretty soon they'll be back at war again. Because, you know, the Greeks couldn't even hold democracy together. How do you think that Negroes could? You know, whites can't. We can't. This is no democracy. You think this is a democracy? Hell no, this is not a democracy. Because whether it's communism or democracy and anything like that, it don't work. But they try to tell you that's what you got. But you got oligarchy, ruled by the few, and by God, you get out of line, they'll show you how. They got the military, they got the Northern Command here ready to go. So all these militias out there that talk big and I love America and I'm going to fight for it. Well, go, come on. Come on down. Take a swing at it. See what happens. They're going to come down on you like stink on a skunk, man. They'll take every airplane they got coming after you. And if they don't, if they can't get you with the ones they got here, they'll bring them back in from overseas. We got thousands and thousands of people in bases all over the seas. The ruling class could bring them in any time. Clean them up, man. But the militia guys, well, I got plenty of ammo, and I'm going to be out in the woods, and I got this cave, and I'm going to resist them. Yeah, right.
Used by NSA employees. It's off a secondary highway northeast of the Washington metro area, and it's marked for NSA employees only. Every so often, someone gets a bit confused and does take that exit. They are usually turned around and put back
onto that
secondary highway. But at this point, there is no confirmation that anyone was shot or killed, at least coming from government sources, and there is no indication about
somebody attacked NSA.
There was any particular motive. However, the FBI was relatively quick to say that it does not consider this an act of terrorism.
Oh, too bad.
Rosalind Jordan with the latest from Washington, D.C. Ros, thank you.
Okay. There you
to
go.
To the rack now.
At least one person, whether he was a lone gunman or whatever, has attacked NSA up in Washington State. Need 1,000 people attacking NSA up in Washington State. And I mean not to play around and carry placards either. You know, I was thinking too, and I'm going all over the place today. My congressman up here, now my U.S. senator is smart. He's getting out. While getting out's good, he's not going to run again. Yeah, he's smart enough, he's getting out before 2016. But my congressman, they're even talking about him on a national scale. He's such a kiss-ass. They even mentioned him as running for president. He's a seven-day Adventist, wants the borders wide open, but he's a Republican. Now, how does that work? I was thinking, you know, we should take placards and signs and stand in front of these guys' property. He's got a big farm up here in northern Indiana. It says the sign would say this warmonger needs to be hung or something. But you know why it wouldn't do any good? Because the people driving by are too damn stupid even to know what it means. They don't even know who their congressman is. They don't know anything about him. So what good would it do to go out there and demonstrate against somebody that nobody even knows what the fuck he's doing? You know, it's hard to figure out something that might have some effect. You know, I lay there in bed at night sometimes thinking, now what could I do that would really screw him up? Well, I guess the only thing I can do is what I'm doing now. It's the best I can do. Well, maybe somebody else will get the idea to take the natural law into their own hands. Maybe. I doubt it. I watch movies. That's my relaxation. I watch movies. And it's not a waste of time either, because there's a lot of plots that really turn your brain on and get you thinking. I watched one the other night where this was World War II. You go into the section where they got the foreign movies. And this one was, Norway was occupied or not yet occupied or partially occupied by the Germans or not. I don't know. But anyhow, two planes were flying over north of Norway where it was colder than hell and snow was 10 foot deep. And the one shot the other one down. Three guys crawl out of the German aircraft that they went down too, and they had shot, they were the ones that sent the bullets into the British plane, and two guys got out of that. And they're all wandering through this Arctic situation, trying to figure a way of getting out or getting food or getting something. And they find a cabin, and the Germans get in it, into it first. And they're there trying to set up things. They get fire going, all that. And all of a sudden they hear guys talking outside. It hits the Brits that came down in their plane. And they're walking in there. And so the Germans, after a little lot of suspicion, though, let them in. And then they try to work out this way of tolerating each other in this cabin. And the Germans got the guns, so they're making the rules. So they put a line across the middle of the cabin and said, you guys, if you want to come over here, you got to ask permission. And so the Brits had to stay at the other end. Then later on, the Brits get a hold of the gun, and they say the same thing. But gradually, they get to know each other and get to liking each other and, you know, like that. It's a very good film. A very good film to show you how ridiculous white fratricidal warfare is. Sorry, I forgot the name of the movie. But there's a lot of foreign movies, and especially a lot of foreign movies about World War II. I've watched a lot of them in there, which show the Germans in a better light, or a good light sometimes, the whole bit. So they call it the Centurion area of Hulu, where they have all these foreign films. Well, they're talking about this story up in Washington of, I guess, one lone car and one lone guy trying to crash into the NSA. He's dead, I guess. But they're trying to say right away, this is not terrorism, not terrorism. Why would one lone guy try to break into the NSA if there wasn't something like that involved? That's the trouble with using the term terrorism. You can use it any way you want. Or not use it. It's just a buzzword. Well, here's something interesting. World War III, the calm before the storm. In historical terms, these are the final seconds of the 11th hour, and the clock is ticking. World War III is a loaded term, as are many historical references. It assumes that these tragic mass murders that humanity calls war are isolated events with distinct beginnings and ends. This kind of oversimplification obscures the multi-generational chain reactions that lead up to the moment when swords are drawn or missiles fly. Of course, there's another reason that the public is rarely conscious of these chain reactions. The ruling classes learned long ago that the best way to take a nation to war is to trick them into it. Vietnam was an extension of the Cold War, which was an extension of World War II, which was a direct result of the terms imposed on Germany following World War I. Well, like I've always said, if you didn't like Hitler, you shouldn't have had World War I. Plenty of Jews supported World War I. Plenty of Jews fought for World War I, which ended up biting them in the ass in World War II. This multifaceted conflict that is unfolding right now between the declining powers of the West and geopolitical and economic upstarts from the East may not end up being labeled as a World War III in the history books. Perhaps they continue to label each phrase with a catchy name like Operation Baltic Freedom or Operation Siberian Storm, whatever. On the other hand, if someone does something stupid, history books may not make it through the aftermath at all. Of course, it would be never, I would never insinuate that the United States government would ever do anything stupid. Yuck, yuck. It's not like the country is run by a gaggle of warmongering imbeciles. Yuck, yuck. Well, actually, I suppose that depends on how you define the word imbecile. Congress did not pass Resolution 758 and the Ukraine Freedom Support Act of 2014, which lay the foundation for open, direct conflict between U.S. and Russia. The law provides for lethal aid to Kiev. More sanctions are on the table, and of course, you've been paying attention. You might have noticed that Washington is playing the game of high-stakes chicken with oil prices, with a little help from our good friends the Saudis, all the while playing hardball with China in the Southeast Asia, and ramping up production of nuclear weapons, while their puppets in Kiev continue to shell civilians in eastern Ukraine. What could possibly go wrong? Headed into 2015, it may appear that we are having something of a calm before the storm, but that was an illusion created by selective reporting. This war is already hot on multiple fronts, and it's been for years. All it takes is one stupid move for proxy wars to cut out the middleman, and then all the bets are off. There you go. Sounds pretty intelligent to me. Yep.
I frankly think that crisis initiation is really tough. And it's very hard for me to see how the United States president can get us to war with Iran. Which leads me to conclude that if, in fact, compromise is not coming, that the traditional way of America gets to war is what would be best for U.S. interests. Some people might think that Mr. Roosevelt wanted to get us into World War II, as David mentioned. You may recall we had to wait for Pearl Harbor. Some people might think Mr. Wilson wanted to get us into World War I. You may recall he had to wait for the Lusitania episode. Some people might think that Mr. Johnson wanted to send troops to Vietnam. You may recall he had to wait for the Gulf of Tonkin episode. We didn't go to war with Spain until the USS, until the Maine exploded. And may I point out that Mr. Lincoln did not feel he could call out the Federal Army until Fort Sumter was attacked, which is why he ordered the commander at Fort Sumter to do exactly that thing which the South Carolinians had said would cause an attack. So if, in fact, the Iranians aren't going to compromise, it would be best if somebody else started the war. One can combine other means of pressure with sanctions. I mentioned that explosion on August 17th. We could step up the pressure. I mean, look, people, Iranian submarines periodically go down. Someday one of them might not come up. Who would know why? We can do a variety of things if we wish to increase the pressure. I'm not advocating that. But I'm just suggesting that this is not a either-or proposition. It's just sanctions has to succeed or other things. We are in the game of using covert means against the Iranians. We could get nastier at that.
Wars start over many times stupid things. International wars. Look at World War I. Because an anarchist shot the Archduke in Slovenia or wherever it was. The whole worldwide war starts. Just like a domino effect. And as nowadays, with the speed of information and the power of the weapons they've got, the war might be over in 2 weeks. Nothing left. Well, here's another little item that you might be interested in. The pursuit of dominance is the primary propellant of history. Always has been, always will be. Well, I guess then we'll have to stick to our Might is Right book. Those who don't identify this assumption are not excused in the grand chess game, but instead are displaced and exploited by forces they do not comprehend. From the aspect of those who rule the board, it is unmistakably desirable to have a populace unaware pawns that it is to have a bunch of adversaries who can escalate an effective battle. To that end, it has always been preferable for the rulers to build up illusions which conceal the true nature of the game. Walter Lippmann explained the manufacture of consent as an innovation in the usage of democracy. Democracy. Basically, it's a method of domination, and he said this was beneficial and essential because the prevailing interest, the accepted concerns of the population, elude the public. Lippmann wasn't theorizing, nor was he explaining an anomaly which he had observed from far away. He was part of the particular class that he directly affected the evolution of this new kind of control. So what was this new method that Lippmann was alluding to? The answer to the inquiry takes us back to the dawn of World War I. In 1917, Woodrow Wilson assembled the Committee on Public Information, known as the CPI. It was a disinformation bureau, and its goal was to boost war approval among the American people. The CPI, controlled by a man named George Creel, was known for its vulgar approach, blatant overstatements, and outright deceptions.
Is growing against a so-called religious freedom bill. The governor signed it into law last week, and sponsors say the controversial measure will protect Indiana business owners from being forced to act against their religious beliefs. But critics say the measure will be used to discriminate against gays and lesbians. To date, state lawmakers on both sides of the issue went on the offensive.
The governor and the Republican leaders won't say it, but we will. Discrimination is wrong, and it should be illegal.
Oh, yeah, man.
This new law in Indiana, the same one that 30 other states have, does not discriminate against anyone. It is not the intent of the law to discriminate against anyone, and it will not be allowed to discriminate against anyone.
Oh.
Indiana Republicans say the bill received bipartisan support and mirrors federal laws. They also point out that President Obama and Democratic leaders like Nancy Pelosi have supported similar legislation.
Oh, okay.
Apple CEO Tim Cook.
Worse is better. Worse is better. Worse is better. Worse is better.
Announcing a new state law.
The health emergency over HIV. There are 71 confirmed cases of the virus in rural Scott County alone. All are linked to dirty IV needles shared by drug users. And that number is expected to rise. Randall Pinkston has more.
Uh-oh.
This is about health and lives. And so, therefore, we have signed today an executive order that initiates a robust multi-agency response to stop this HIV outspread in its tracks. And this we will do.
Normally, there are only about 5 cases of HIV reported each year in Scott County. But since January, 79 people there have tested positive for the virus that causes AIDS. And that number is expected to go up. Health officials are trying to contact at least another 100 people who may be infected through shared needles.
This is truly a crisis that is centered on a crisis of drug abuse, and it's the drug Opana.
Opana is a powerful prescription pain medication that comes in pill form. Some drug abusers crush the pills and shoot them intravenously for a faster and stronger high. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention calls painkiller abuse a deadly national epidemic. The CDC says one of the best ways to stop HIV from spreading is through needle exchange programs, something the Indiana governor has staunchly opposed. Now he says the epidemic calls for drastic measures. He's calling for a 30-day exchange program.
The state of Indiana is bringing the full resources on giving the local community what they need to get the job done.
Randall?
I wouldn't spend a dime stopping the damn thing. In fact, hand out all that damn, those pills. If people are so stupid and so corrupt that they're going to catch AIDS when they know what things are, what causes it in the whole bit, hell, let them go. Let them go. I don't care. That's the attitude I get. You got to take. It's might is right attitude. Too bad that lowlifes that get into this kind of stuff many times will drag it home to their spouse or their wife or their husband. That's why wives and husbands have to be much more observant of each other's activities. You know, with all this kind of stuff going around, a wife has to know where in the hell her husband's hanging out at and what he's doing. Same way with a husband watching a wife. This is just the way it is. And also, there needs to be instituted national health checks. When you get married, you get a health check. It's called public safety, and that's it. Otherwise, if you're going to smoke and smoke and smoke, like I'm surrounded by people here in Indiana that do, you're going to have to suffer the consequences. If you eat, and get morbidly obese, and you get sugar diabetes, well, that's just the way it goes. You made your bed, you got to lay in it. Actually, on that other thing about spreading propaganda before a war, it was not Creel so much as Bernays. Bernays was the big hatchet man that traveled throughout the country spreading pro-war propaganda. He was a psychological warfare guy. And the nephew of that, what's his name, that big psychiatrist over in Europe? Forget his name at the moment. But anyhow, it was Edward Bernays. Check him out. Well, what do you think about Bergdahl, the GI who walked away from his post? And now they want to hammer him and crucify him. Hell, I wished everybody over there in the U.S. military would walk off their post and say the hell with it. Throw the goddamn guns down and say, stick it up your ass. Take me home or I'll hitchhike home some way. I'll get home, but I'm not doing this anymore because I see how rotten it is, what a put-up job it is, and how you're a bunch of warmongering criminals. So I'm walking on out of here, baby. Walking to New Orleans, walking to New Orleans. Yeah. Well, did you know that the chosen people in very well-to-do Israel, I got a problem? 1,658,200 people in Israel are living below the poverty line. What happened to all that money we sent over there? Oh, I know. They build atomic bombs. Meir Tunim is helping people in the crisis at the Passover, a particularly difficult time for many. Meir Tunim is there. Help us feed them. Well, of course, he's the CEO of this Fighting Poverty in Israel, and I'm sure he's making a wad of money, too. So, over 1 million people. That's a lot of people living below the poverty line. What's happening to all that money? We give them $750 billion since 1948. I think most of it went for war materials, right? And weapons to kick the ass of the Palestinians, right? Well, the Catholic Church finally wised up. They're trying a new way to get people closer to God. They've opened a bar. A bar being run by the Catholic Church might sound like the setting for a lame Irish joke, but it's not Irish and it's no joke. AFP reports that the bar recently opened in northern France with the backing of the Catholic Church. Bar Cana in Lille launched this month as part of an effort to reach out to young people, yeah, right, who might be more willing to interact in a bar on a Saturday night than in a church on Sunday morning. Well, I'm sure they would. I would, too. It is at heart an effort to reach young people and those who have never had any idea of entering a church. Well, they should put a whorehouse in there, too, and then they'd even get more young people. And perhaps it is easier to go to a bar, said Benjamin Florin, 29-year-old Lille diocesan worker who was one of the initiators of the project. Although we can't help thinking that the type of interaction likely among young people in a bar on a Saturday night is not quite what would be acceptable during Mass the next morning. The bar's name is significant, referring to the wedding feast of Cana, where Jesus said to have performed his first miracle, turning water into wine. And then that led to alcoholism, rather than the infinitely easier and much more common practice of turning wine into water. Bar Cana was inspired by the Pope, who was told the church to think outside the square when it comes to its going about its pastoral business, and this is certainly a left-field idea. It took 2 years of planning applications and a financial kickstart from the church to get started, but customers have seen it as a blessing. I'm sure they do. Aurelian, Constance, and Sylvian were sipping Trappist beer at the bar when AFP spoke to them. The concept of a Catholic bar intrigued us, said practicing Catholic Sylvian. They want to break the traditional image. You can feel a new way to live, the gospel, even if this time they've changed water into beer. The bar has a full-time employee and a dozen volunteers who will be serving food, slinging drinks, and performing the traditional sacred bartender service of offering a friendly ear, presumably in lieu to an official confession. Now, there you go. You can confess to the bartender. You'll probably get more action out of that. They will be there mainly for talking to people, if they wish, and for listening, explained Regis Holmi, a deacon and a president of the Bar Cana Association. There are nods to traditional Catholicism throughout the bar. The Wi-Fi password is Dio Gracias, God be thanked, and a carafe of house wine is referred to as a Madonna. Above the beer pumps, all the beers come from abbeys and monasteries, naturally. Is a figurine of Pope Francis and biblical verses adorn the walls. Sadly, AFP doesn't say if the wine is Chateauneuf du Pape or if the top shelf is filled with Holy Spirits. Wow. While it might not sound like the sort of place to hit up for a raging Friday night, the bar does focus more on the good works end of religion rather than the thou shalt not side. Patrons come in and buy two coffees and get one. The other is paid forward for someone who can't afford one. And the profits from the operation go towards humanitarian projects in needy areas, like helping other Catholics start bars in their town. Yeah. They might have to look more closely at their business model if they want to make a real difference in the world's needy. However, the bar opened on March 18th, thereby missing out on the world's most profitable drinking occasion, St. Patrick's Day, by 24 hours. Poor planning, poor planning. They could have made a fortune. That's the kind of church I wouldn't mind. I'd go down there and have a few drinks. That's it for today, 14:05. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Tears Day, and we'll see what crap we can dig up tomorrow. And how many of you people I can offend tomorrow, okay? Bye-bye. Tommy. Well, the devil has sure got into that Catholic bunch over there in France, man. We got to send some fundamentalist Christian Zionists over there and figure that out.